The next case on our calendar today is in the matter of the welfare of the children of IEK and KMM Senior. Council will each have 15 minutes for your argument, followed by 5 minutes of rebuttal for appellant. You can proceed when you're ready, and I'll just ask that you identify yourself and the client you represent. And also, the podium is adjustable, so feel free to adjust it if need be.
May it please the court, my name is Ann Carlson. I represent appellant mother, IEK, I apologize, I'm a little bit under the weather, so my voice is not what it could be, and I'm sorry for that. I'm requesting reversal on 5 grounds. Four are that the evidence is insufficient to support the statutory basis to terminate parental rights. The most significant grounds that I'm asking for reversal on is failure to provide reasonable efforts to reunify the family. Mere poverty is seldom, if ever, sufficient ground to deprive parents of their natural right to their children, to say nothing of their statutory right. And the kind of poverty that may prevent two people that have 3 children together from getting married may also prevent those people from seeking a legal transfer of custody through the courts. Poverty, of course, manifests in many ways. It may prevent people from having working homes. It may prevent people from finding jobs, housing. In this case, the agency asked mother to pull herself up by the bootstraps and stop being impoverished. They gave her roughly 3 months.
How does poverty interfere with mother's consistent failure to show up for visitation on time, not to engage with the children when she's there? She talked on the phone. She indicated some chemical use issues. I mean, that's not a poverty-driven factor. When you have visitation, you have the ability to engage.
But poverty would prevent someone that doesn't have transportation from being able to.
But she was there, and when she was there, she'd be on her phone. She didn't engage. I don't know what other word to use, but she didn't have meaningful interaction is what I'm trying to say. In poverty, she was there. So the poverty factors that may have led up to her not being there, that isn't evident.
If the grounds for termination is that the visits with the children could have been more meaningful, if that's a sufficient
grounds. Well, the first factor that the judge relied on or established was a finding that the mother had abandoned the children. And I don't know if I necessarily agree that leaving the children in the care of their father is abandonment, but that also includes a requirement by the parent to exercise parental duties, which would include the duty to visit, the duty to do such things. And I've got a question in here somewhere. I agree with you on the poverty issues that finding housing is difficult. Finding employment is equally difficult, and those factors should not shut you out from having children. But you also have to assume the parent-child relationship, which means having meaningful time with your children.
I agree. I don't think that speaking on the phone during visits is ideal, but I also don't think that it's conduct that endangers the children. I don't think bringing your nephew to a visit is, without getting permission from the agency, is recommended, but I also don't think that it endangers your children. And I think that this is where rehabilitative services would have been very helpful, to give mother some guidance in parenting the children that she didn't have contact with going forward. And I would agree with your point that I find it unusual to assert that it's abandonment when mother leaves the children with father. That is
for 3 years and never have contact with them? Seems really odd to me, quite frankly.
And
I mean, that's abdicating your parental responsibilities.
I don't know that the record, I don't know that we have enough evidence to be convinced that she didn't have, or attempt rather, I should say. She reports to the social worker, "I didn't have contact with the children because father didn't allow me to have contact with the children," and we don't know what sort of relationship.
Didn't she also report to the social worker that she left the children with the father to take care of some personal issues?
Yes.
And there's no evidence that she attempted to contact the children during that time period, and she chose not to attend the termination hearing. She chose not to testify. So the lack of evidence is really in large part due to her decision not to testify.
And that was a poor choice on her part. Certainly one of the worst facts on this record is that she didn't attend the termination of parental rights trial. But despite her not testifying, the record before the court indicates the only thing we know is that the reason that she ever indicated to the county that she didn't have contact is because father prevented it from happening. It would have been better had she shown up to the trial. But I understand she must have been very discouraged and anticipated how this trial was going to go. And when we say mother doesn't intend to assume parental responsibility, I feel like that's a euphemism for mother's poverty. I mean, to say she doesn't intend to assume parental responsibility is to say she can't currently financially provide for these children.
Why did mother decline then the services that were offered when the county was willing to help her find employment, find housing, and so on? I mean, she, as far as my recall of the findings by the court and the record evidence, she refused those services.
My understanding of the way that they offered to assist her in finding employment, or rather housing, was they gave her a list of places she could contact in Chisago County, which is quite a distance from where she was living in Ramsey County. I don't know how helpful it is to have a list of housing in a county that you don't have the means to get to, and public transportation won't bring you there. And your other point was, I apologize.
Well, I'm talking about the plan. You know, that included mother's ability to set up her own appointments, and then she would not follow up with the treatment. I mean, she had a phone because she obviously talked on it when she was with the children, and it seems as if there's her lack of taking advantage of the services that were being provided to her.
To me, the services that were provided to her were meant as obstacles to overcome. They weren't meant as services that were going to rehabilitate her. You know, prove to us that you don't have chemical dependency issues. Prove to us you don't have mental health issues. What's the difference between a rehabilitative service and a service that aids the agency in proving that a parent is not fit?
So in your view, what services should the agency have offered that it didn't?
I think more intensive planning face-to-face would have been helpful. I'm also concerned about what conversations took place prior to mother getting court-appointed counsel and her understanding of timelines, her understanding of the rush here. Certainly, I'm sure the social worker was well-meaning in advising mother to contact court administration to appear by phone. As someone who has attempted to appear by phone by contacting court administration, it is not that simple. And it is not something that you're going to be granted just by calling court administration. You need a lawyer in the courtroom to indicate to the judge, my client is available to appear by phone. It feels like there were shortcuts. It feels like things were truncated, mother didn't get enough time. And with regard to the statutory bases, it feels like there's some close enough. When we say abandonment, it requires two things. It requires an actual abandonment and intention to forsake parental duties. What I'm not seeing on this record is actual abandonment, in that once she learned that the children were in foster care, she moved from Arkansas to Minnesota, reached out to the agency and said, tell me what I have to do. With regard to neglect of duties, my understanding is that you do need to find that a parent is financially able to provide for you to terminate pursuant to that statute. That's pursuant to in the welfare of stat. I don't know that you can terminate based on failure to correct conditions for a non-custodial parent. There's a footnote 5 in the matter of the welfare of TR calls this into question. ever repeated neglect at...
But she wasn't a non-custodial parent. She was a custodial parent legally, wasn't she? She had chosen to move away from them, but that didn't mean she wasn't a custodial parent.
It did pursuant to the rules of juvenile protection procedure, which would say that she's a non-residential parent.
But
she wasn't living with the children.
She voluntarily left those children. I mean, whether it was for personal reasons or because of father, I don't know that we can characterize her under the circumstances here as a non-custodial parent. She chose to be a non-involved parent.
For a period of time, she chose to tend to her personal issues, and we don't know to what degree she was or wasn't attempting to be involved in the children's lives. Mm-hmm. I would say that because she's a non-residential parent, and we know that, that seems to more align with a non-custodial parent. And again, coming to the poverty issue, people who don't have necessarily the means are not going to seek out transferring custody legally from one parent to the other through the courts. That costs money. That's not easy. It's a lot of work. They have to get lawyers involved and pay filing fees. And I feel the record is lacking in evidence of rehabilitative services. And I feel that there's just one fatal flaw in the court's finding, which is finding number 22, where she states that mother did not call the social worker back to provide an address. Because the record, the social worker's notes indicate that mother called the social worker back the next day to provide an address to arrange for mother to go to and from court. And I believe had she been able to make it to court back in May, we'd be having a completely different discussion, or we may not be having this discussion. Mm-hmm. It feels like there was a rush here that was unjustified. And when there are three children who do have a relationship with mother, we should be exercising all due diligence in efforts to assist reunification.
Counsel, you're not challenging the court's best interest finding. Is that accurate?
I'm aware that the best interest is generally not susceptible to a global review of the record as it involves credibility determinations. I think that it is unfortunate. No, I'm not challenging best interest, but I do think it's unfortunate that there isn't a permanent placement for these children at the time that we moved to terminate mother's parental rights, and that part of what motivated us to kind of get the let out and terminate mother's parental rights earlier than was required was the thought that these children are going to be more likely to find a foster placement if mother's parental rights are terminated. I would say that without challenging that aspect of the findings, foster care is not in the best interest of children when there's a relative who is willing and able to assume the responsibility of caring for them, and that the agency does have a responsibility to assist that parent in becoming able. For those reasons, I'm asking that the Court of Appeals will reverse and remand with instructions that mother would receive counsel prior to the court adopting a case plan aimed at reunifying mother with the children. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Janine Putnam. I represent Chisago County Health and Human Services, the respondent in this matter. And the county is asking that the panel affirm the termination of appellant mother's parental rights. The county is of the position that the district court's findings are sound and that pursuant to the standard of review, those findings should be left intact and that the termination should be affirmed. That being said, there are a couple of issues that I think are interesting for the panel to look at, and I do think the issue of abandonment is one of those. Abandonment's a little bit tricky. There's case law on both extreme ends of the spectrum, and this particular situation falls a little bit closer to the middle. The name of the case is escaping me at this point, but a case where a parent had no contact with a child for a significant period of time, but abandonment was not found, involved a father who had, you know, a stable life situation, stable housing, stable employment. There was no reason that he couldn't assume the care of the child, other than that he hadn't had contact with the child. Now, the termination in that case had been granted in part to keep a sibling relationship intact, and the court found that that wasn't enough. Now, when you look at In Re Stat, when you talk about abandonment and intention to take on responsibilities of the children, statements that you want to care for your children and even contact with your children is not necessarily enough to show that you want to assume that responsibility. Visitation with a child is one thing. A willingness and an ability to actually care for a child full-time is something else. And so while the county supports the district court's conclusion, I do think that that's an interesting question for the panel to look at.
You agree that abandonment in this context needs to be intentional?
I do, Your Honor. And I would argue that here the record shows that it was. The mother voluntarily left the children with the father. The information we have is that she may have wanted contact with the children, but at all times she remained the custodial parent and had a legal right to enforce that custody. She didn't at any time choose to do it. I understand the arguments here that it's difficult to be a pro se litigant, and I would agree to that with that. But I would also note that, at least in my experience, district courts have bent over backwards in order to attempt to facilitate a pro se appellant, allow them to be heard in some capacity. And so I don't believe she had no ability to try to contact these children, and we don't have any indication in the record that she tried to enforce those custodial rights. Now, the issue of custody I'd like to address briefly. I do believe that the record clearly shows that the mother is the custodial parent. I would note that even the juvenile protection procedure rule that's alluded to by counsel, which is Rule 2.01, paren 19, it defines legal custodian as a person who, by court order or statute, has sole or joint legal or physical custody of the child. Here, that person was mother. So even pursuant to that rule, which certainly is a protection or a procedural rule and doesn't trump a court order or a statute, the father was the custodial parent. Ultimately, however, whether or not mom was the custodial parent doesn't affect what happened here in the way that counsel seems to be suggesting. Pursuant to statute, Minnesota Statute 260C.219, when considering placement with a non-custodial parent or other relative, the agency is required to determine whether or not that placement is appropriate. And it specifically notes in that statute that part of that is if a non-custodial parent or a non-residential parent or the other parent isn't suitable, that a case plan be provided. Here, that's what the agency did. I would agree that the mother didn't end up utilizing many rehabilitative services. But the reason for that was because she would not get the assessments necessary to determine what services would be appropriate and to allow the agency to provide those services. The social worker attempted repeatedly to get her set up with an agency that would accept her county-based insurance, and she simply declined, which I think is also an indication that she didn't intend to take on the care of these children.
Did the county, though, give the mother enough time? I mean, she moves back in May, and then the petition is filed in September. That's not a long period of time.
That's true. There was not a lot of time between the time that mother contacted the agency and the time that petition was filed. But I'd ask the panel to look at the total amount of time the mother had to make progress prior to trial in this matter. She signed her case plan before it was court ordered. I do understand she didn't have counsel at that time. However, she was later appointed counsel who didn't challenge the case plan. The mother at no time challenged the case plan. She agreed that the requirements were appropriate. She expressed a desire to do things like chemical dependency treatment. And if you look at the entire timeline here, we get to trial on December 27th, and the only step the mother has taken is getting a mental health assessment 1 week prior to trial. So although I agree she didn't have a case plan for a full 12 months, the complete lack of progress by the mother indicates that that time would have simply left these children in foster care without a resolution while we waited out an expiration of an additional couple of months.
The court made findings that four statutory grounds were supported by the evidence for the termination. What's the county's position on that? Do you take a position that the evidence supports one or more of those findings more than the other, or that it's stronger for certain findings as opposed to others?
Your Honor, the county believes that all of those findings are sound, although I would acknowledge that the court doesn't make an explicit finding that the mother is financially able to support the children. I would note, however, that there are findings that mother is employable. She was employed for a number of months during the course of this case. If you look into the record, there are different explanations given for why that job ended. At one point, the mother indicates she hurt her back. At another point, she indicates she no longer liked working at Walmart. But mother did rapidly gain employment after coming to the state of Minnesota. So I don't believe there's an argument here that the mother wasn't able to obtain employment. And I think that the court's findings do support that. So although I agree that the court didn't explicitly state the mother is financially able to support the children, I do think there are facts sufficient on the record to support that ground for termination. I would like to comment briefly, since I do have some time remaining, on the issue of reasonable efforts. As I noted before, without those assessments, the ability to determine which rehabilitative services are necessary was really limited. I would also note that the record clearly shows that with regard to housing, the social worker did provide housing lists, both related to St. Paul as well as related to Chisago County. The mother declined Washington County housing lists. She stated she wanted to live in Chisago County because that's where the children wanted to live. At the time of the first meeting, the social worker drove the mother to the Hennepin County Government Center in order to allow her to look into housing resources there. The social worker regularly called multiple shelters in order to find a bed for the mother. So the social worker was assisting with housing at one point, and it's unclear whether this was the case or not, but at one point the mother represented to Chisago County that she was in a shelter. She didn't have the name of the shelter. She couldn't provide that information to the social worker. And so for a period of time when the social worker believed the mother was in a shelter, those agencies then typically work with our county representatives to facilitate more permanent housing for the mother. Of course, without the contact information for the shelter, that ability was also limited. So I do take issue on this record with the assertion that the social worker wasn't trying to help this mother get housing. Additionally, the mother was periodically staying with relatives and not always providing the address or location of those relatives. And so there are some resources available here that it's just unclear. It's unclear why the mother wasn't able to be more successful in that particular realm, particularly with the evidence of her employability. Ultimately, though, without verification that mother had a safe and stable place for these children to go to, without a period of reintroduction, there's evidence in the record that the children had very little memory of the mother. It would have not at any time been appropriate for the county to simply say, your mother has arrived, you're going home with her. These children didn't know this person. There needed to be that process. And so regardless if the mother is the custodial parent or the non-residential parent or the non-custodial parent, the county had an obligation to ensure that those children would be safe in her care. And unless the panel has further questions, I'd yield the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would agree with the respondent that the record indicates mother is employable, but I don't think that employability equates to financially able. Employability is a question for workers' compensation. It's not a question for, are you currently able to provide for three children that are roughly teenagers? The record indicates mother came in.
What does it mean to be financially able then?
What does it mean to be financially able?
What do those terms in the statute mean then?
That you would be able to financially provide for your children. I'm sorry, I'm saying that working at Walmart does not necessarily equate to being able to financially provide for your children.
Okay.
That, I apologize.
No, I understood that. I just was wondering what that standard would be. I mean, you know, are you suggesting that to be financially able, you have to have earning potential of a certain income, or how is a court to determine whether a parent is financially able?
Certainly I've seen cases come in where parents are relying entirely on government assistance, and that isn't the reason for the termination of their parental rights. Or is that a reason to bring in parents for a termination of parental rights if they're reliant on government assistance but the children's needs are being met? We would not accuse said parents of failing to provide for the children's needs. This is where I think time would have really helped mother. And I understand, as someone who represents parents, how frustrating and discouraging it would be if 15 days after you finally make it to a court appearance, you're told that the agency is of the position that they want to terminate your parental rights. It goes from a place where you are in a working together relationship to an adversarial relationship.
Wasn't there a period of at least a month, though, after the initial contact in May or June where mother totally lost contact with the agency and she acknowledged that she had kind of dropped the ball in that regard?
Yes.
So now we're into July where she's showed up and said, you know, I want my kids back. But then after her initial contact and her signing of the case plan, she becomes unable to be located again, and she makes no effort to contact the agency.
My understanding on the record is that she, at some point in time during that two-month period, got a new phone. And it also appears that she was working on getting employment. She got employment during the month of June, and she got health insurance during the month of June. So it wasn't that she wasn't working on various aspects of her case plan during the month of June and July. It was that she didn't maintain contact with the agency. Once she again reached out to the agency and said, help me figure out what I need to do to reunify with my children. I don't want them in foster care. After that two-month hiccup, she was in regular contact with a social worker. So there's progress. It's slow. It didn't happen immediately, but we're moving in the direction of doing what the agency asks. And we shortened the amount of time that we would normally give a parent under the premise that the children would more easily find a permanent placement in foster care. It is presumed that a parent is capable of caring for their children, and that presumption should have carried more weight than it did. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Council Bolt, for your arguments. We're aware that this is on an expedited time frame, so we will issue our decision in the expedited time frame. Thank you.